When I started seminary at Star King School for the Ministry in 2000, I didn't know very much about the history of Unitarians or of the Universalists. What I did know was that this faith tradition that I had discovered was large enough to hold my atheist thoughts. It welcomed my mystical wonderings and was deeply committed to shining the light of love and justice into even the darkest corners of hatred and evil in the world. I wanted to be a part of this noble tradition with every fiber of my being. I was beside myself to realize that I had found my way to the people who consistently dare to stand up to the bullies, who relentlessly speak the truth with courage and without compromise, and who have most recently taught me to humbly hand the microphone to those with the least power and voice in our community. Through my studies, I came to understand that what makes such a bold and fearless faith possible is a theology rooted in the belief that all people, regardless of race, class, physical or mental ability, sexual orientation, or social standing, are created in the image of perfect love. And by virtue of that fundamental truth, each and every person holds inherent worth. I want to share with you part of an essay that I came across recently by UU author Sarah Robinson. The piece was written in 2008 in response to the shooting at the Tennessee Valley UU congregation. What she writes is an excellent reminder that our creedlessness is not a detriment, but rather a gift, an invitation. As UUs, we are not given the luxury to rest comfortably and mindlessly upon any dogma. Instead, we are each urged to grow spiritually and examine our conscience. We have the audacious faith to trust that a thoroughly examined conscience will necessarily lead us to the truth that love and justice are inextricably bound together. And we know that we are not living in accordance with our faith unless our lives, our actions in the world reflect this deep understanding. So the author begins, "We are an odd group, we Unitarians. Conventional wisdom says that we're soft in all the places that our society values toughness. Our refusal to adhere to any dogma must mean that we're soft in our convictions. Our reflexive open-mindedness is often derided as evidence that we're soft in the head. Our persistent and gentle insistence on liberal values is evidence of hearts too soft to set boundaries. And all of this together leads to a public image of a mushy gathering of feckless intellectuals that somehow lacks cohesion, backbone, focus, or purpose. You can only believe this if you don't know either the history or the modern reality of Unitarian Universalism. The faith's early founders, Michael Servetus and Francis David, were executed for the radical notion that belief in the Trinity, which excluded Muslims and Jews, should not be a requirement for participation in 16th century public life. 400 years later, in the same part of the world, other Unitarians died in concentration camps for having the courage of their humanist convictions. Viola Liuzzo, a 39-year-old mother from Michigan, who was killed by the Klan in the days following the Selma March in 1965, was one of ours, too. And then there are the thousands of us who lived to fight another day, surviving not because we were weak and indecisive, but because we were unshakable in our convictions and unwilling to back down out of sheer cussedness. That Unitarian-bred belief in the nobility of the human spirit was the spiritual foundation on which a plurality of America's founders found sure footing as their convictions crystallized into revolution against tyranny. It fueled the passionate oratory of Daniel Webster, the wisdom of Ben Franklin, and the incisively clear writings of Thomas Paine. It sent Paul Revere out into the cold of an April evening and set Thomas Jefferson to the task of writing a declaration. It recklessly bet the church's entire existence and the lives of its leaders, who willingly and knowingly committed a capital act of treason in order to publish the Pentagon Papers. Unitarianism and Universalism lit the spark of progressive change that drove Susan B. Anthony, Lucy Stone, Julia Ward Howe to organize for women's rights. It sent Jane Addams, Dorothea Dix, Albert Schweitzer, and Clara Barton forth to bring health and hope to the poor. It gave voice to poets from Whitman to Plath to E.E. Cummings, novelists from Dickens to Melville to Vonnegut, and musicians from Bartok to Grieg to Seeger. It fueled the boundless imaginations of Buckminster Fuller and Rod Sterling and Frank Lloyd Wright. It kept Christopher Reeve alive and breathing and working for his causes. I can still hear it crackling hot and fresh every time UU bred Keith Olbermann goes on one of his trademark rants. These are not fearful people, nor do any of them seem to be bedeviled by a lack of conviction. Mushy or feckless are about the last words I use to describe any of them. When you sign up to become a UU, this is the legacy that you take on, and from then on attempt to live up to. It's not God's job to make the world a better place. It's yours. This has never been work for the faint of heart, mind, or spirit, and in this era of conservatism gone crazy, it still isn't. So now, a decade after Sarah wrote that piece, we are witnessing not only the sanctioning and resulting emboldenment of hatred and bigotry in our country, but we are also seeing an unprecedented response from those of us who believe that hatred has no place in civilized society. Last weekend, we saw chilling images of the white nationalist march in Charlottesville, of people wearing Make America Great hats, carrying torches and Confederate flags and swastikas, Sig Heiling and chanting hateful slogans about Jews and people of color and folks in the queer community. And we also saw images of the counter-protesters, clergy of all faiths, many of my UU colleagues walking with their arms linked, singing spirituals and songs of liberation, and thousands of people, some of them draped in rainbow peace flags, some with yellow felt stars of David affixed to their shirts, and many carrying signs proclaiming that love trumps hate and Black Lives Matter. The terrible day ended with three people dead and many more injured. And then yesterday there was another white supremacist gathering, this time in Boston, and this one went very differently. Though several Massachusetts chapters of the KKK announced that they were planning to attend, only about 25 to 30 people showed up for what was called a free speech rally. The participants disbanded within the first hour when around 40,000 anti-racist counter-protesters surrounded the Boston Common, chanting things like, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, white supremacy's got to go," so loud that the rally's speakers could not be heard through the sound system. If you haven't yet seen the aerial photographs of the event yesterday, they are astounding. The anti-racist counter-protesters outnumbered the white supremacists by about 1,000 to 1. There is another white supremacist rally planned this afternoon in Laguna Beach, and a call has gone out to the local churches, the local UU churches, and clergy to come and be a part of the counter-protest. So I look forward to hearing that once again the counter-protesters far outnumber the racists. The title for today's sermon was inspired by a book, Our Prophetic Imperative, Social Gospel in Theory and in Practice. It was by Unitarian Universalist minister Richard S. Gilbert. And in the book, Gilbert writes, "I submit that one of the central missions of the Unitarian Universalist movement is trying to fix these cracks, repairing the world and creating the beloved community of love and justice. The inner urge to work in the service of this vision I call the prophetic imperative, the sewing together of spirituality and social action as a seamless garment." Many of you may be following or know of the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber, who's a Protestant minister and the founder of the North Carolina Moral Mondays. He's one of the most prominent voices right now who is leading the call for a national moral revival. His powerful sermons and speeches remind people of progressive faith to be bold. He says, "As a people of faith, we are not allowed to enter into a depressive silence. We are not allowed to go and hide and try to create some utopia down here with just us. We are not allowed to walk away from the world and find some place to just allow wrong and just injustice to have absolute control over the mic. There must be a dissenting voice in every age." He says, as Walter Wink says, "We must name the powers in the face of the powers. Not just name it in our comfortable conferences. Not just name it where everyone agrees with us, but we must dare in the face of the power to name it, not for the powers to be destroyed, but for the hope that the powers would be transformed and redeemed." And then he reminds us, "You haven't really professed your faith until you've done it in hostile territory." This is how our Unitarian Universalist faith calls us to live. As Unitarian Universalists, we hold that all of us are made in the image of and likeness of perfect love. Yet all of us also have experiences in our lives where we have acted from our lowest impulses, seeing the world from the distorted delusions of our own insecurity and terrors. True, we are all born perfect. But any one of us can choose to fan the flames of our worst, most vile impulses. Any one of us could have been one of those who retreated into the dank cave of hatred, twisted and contorted by fear. Just as any one of us can choose to resist those impulses and instead surround ourselves with love and the practice of kindness and compassion. We come together to support and care for one another, to ignite the spark of love and work creatively to bring more justice into the world. Part of that means calling others out of that darkness and complacency. We know that as people of free will, we could at any time make a different choice. Let us hold up the beckoning light of compassion and issue a steady invitation to people to turn away from the hatred and awaken to love. Forgiveness and redemption are always possible. I came across a Huffington Post story about a small town in Germany that for over 25 years had neo-Nazis gathering for a march every year. But in 2014, the townspeople, fed up with the extremists descending on their town, came up with a brilliant plan to outsmart them. They secretly created Germany's first involuntary walkathon. The idea was that for every 10 meters the neo-Nazis marched, 10 euros would go to an exit program aimed at undermining the very same neo-Nazis. The further they marched, the more money was collected. For every step they took, the neo-Nazis campaigned against neo-Nazis and unwittingly financed more and more defections from their own ranks. So in keeping with any walkathon, there were posters and banners that encouraged the marchers as they went. People handed out bananas to make sure they had enough fuel to make it all the way to the end. And in the end, the neo-Nazi march unwittingly raised 10,000 euros for the anti-neo-Nazi organization. So I will close this morning with some more words from Sarah Robinson's essay. She says, "The UUs, along with the Congregationalists and the Quakers, have been at the beating heart of American liberalism since before the country was founded. We've faced down the ignorant and the arrogant, the terrified and the unreasonable, the cops and the courts and the Congress, so many times that it's not even news anymore. Civil disobedience is built into our bones, and we've come to regard it as one of our more important sacraments. May it be so, my friends. Amen and blessed be."